When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Percolate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious.
Okay, first things first, my coffee cup has a hole in it. That is so not cool. Hi there, and welcome. Hope you're having a good morning. Yeah, I'm sitting here doing my news prep, trying to figure out what's going on, you know, around the world. And I noticed my hand was getting a little wet, like, oh, what? And there's a puddle. Okay, so I'm awake now, for sure. Cool thing out this week, the UFO book. This is something, because it's local. And the headline really smacks of, listen to me now. UFO hunter stumbles upon vast conspiracy. The 37th parallel is the name of it. We're going to have Margie Kay in here in a couple of weeks or so, and she can back this up. But this is one of those things where he wanted to track X-Files and Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And so he decides to check it out. And this is what this is all the real, you know, kind of the creepy stuff, the cattle mutilations, that kind of stuff, and UFO hotspots. Well, he takes a tour. And Missouri and Kansas are right in there. So there we're gonna get probably a lot of people who want to come tour this wonderful 37th parallel, the UFO highway. So I'm not going to get into it right now because maybe we'll wait and give this. I'll put a link on Wendy's Coffee House on the blog spot. But that one got my attention because it's right here, hometown. Now, the other one that I thought was really fun, cats are always interesting. Apparently, the internet is there's no lack. And as a matter of fact, I'll leave you with something at the end here for the cat lover in you. Accidentally gets her owner elected to town council. The guy really didn't want to be elected, but he decided he would put something on his picture to make him look more human and more interesting. They said what happened was somebody said you should just go ahead and try out. And he's a Norwegian black metal. Well, okay, fine. metal rocker. And I do not know how to pronounce, other than just to go for it, Gleve Nagel. Fenris is what he goes by, Fenris. So he got elected because to make himself look more humanizing or human or, you know, personable, he puts a picture of him and his cat. The cat did it. Everybody loved the cat. Now he has to show up for it. It says, the campaign was a picture of him holding his cat saying, please don't vote for me. that was kind of the nail in the coffin. It won it. So anyway, the cat's name translates to peanut butter. They said that's a rough translation. So who wouldn't vote for that? All right. So now you know if you're running for office, just because there might be some last minute adjustments here to all campaign posters across. That would be really nice. Okay. Just that would be fun. So he asked if, he really wanted, yeah, he's going to show up. He's obligated. He can't say no. And said, well, so is the cat coming too? Will Peanut Butter be attending the council meetings? No, she'd really hate that. Guaranteed slam dunk. If you want to run for political office, put your pet with you in the photo. The cool thing, the dolphins in the news this week. Ah, man. Oh, my guest today is going to be Deborah Diamond. She's the author of Life After Near Death. Really fascinating book. Excellent compilation. We'll talk with her after the break. But dolphins having a conversation. This was a really, really cool headline. The problem is it's not making some people happy. People who actually have a vested interest because they have been doing scientific studies on dolphins for 30 years. Immediately throwing water on the fact that the dolphins are having conversation. Because, of course, how do we know that they're really talking? And we've been trying to figure this out for 30 years, and that isn't what we think's happening. We think they're making clicks, and we've known that for 29 years. But Richard Connor says, it's complete bull, and you can quote me. So there we go. He's a marine biologist at the University of Massachusetts, Dartmouth, and a researcher. He's been doing this for 30 years. Says the problem is that now when people make real scientific discoveries, the public, already having been exposed to this nonsense, of course, that this is in his words, will not be impressed because they think that Russian researchers have already shown that they have language. Didn't we get over this in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? Didn't this already get solved? Yes, they have language and they're leaving. And now that we've discovered they do have language, we know they're going to be leaving sometime very soon. And then the mice, yeah, they might still be here. That's the problem, because the mice are the ones who are really running things. The People Walker of Los Angeles? Yeah, yeah. This is working. He's already got five people employed under him. He decided, because he's an actor, which actors, you know how that goes. Anyway, he wanted to pay a few bills. And acting, of course, is sometimes not good at producing income to pay bills, especially when you need it. So he decided to do the dog walking. Well, that wasn't cool, because when dog walking is involved, you have to pick up stuff. Stinky stuff. And he was not into that. So he decided, you know what? You're not really paid for walking the dog. You're paid to do the other. And so he decided to eliminate the dog and take the people. And what happened is, he said, it's like, it's really cool because he's 6'2", all right? And he also has a long beard. So he looks a rather unkempt, which would put off anybody who might try to mug you. So if you're a female, having this guy walk you. Now, the first time he says he does walk is he puts a T-shirt on. It says, so people, everybody knows that he's legit. And it's $7 per mile in case you want to go out to L.A. and try this. But he puts the big, huge T-shirt. So he shows up, this security guard looking kind of guy with his T-shirt that says on it, dog walker. No, I'm sorry. People walker. And he says sometimes that doesn't work because people don't want everybody to know that they're walking, they're paid, that this is an assignment. But he's got clients, and there are five people who are employed covering various areas, downtown Hollywood, Eagle Rock. I mean, it's legit. He's been overwhelmed with requests. So maybe we could try this here, or wherever you are. But he says he's hoping his acting career will pick up soon. But he's thrilled. He says, it's a walk in the park. It's paying the bills. Ta-da. I love that. So innovation. All right. Google Talks Hypnosis. If you haven't seen this guy who is an incredible hypnotist, Richard Barker, he's been all over. I haven't seen him, but hey, I've been busy. So anyway, Google decided because they just wanted to see, you know, is this real? Is this legit? You can check it out, the videos. He puts everybody to sleep. Somebody does a fish swim like a goldfish thing, and the other person's the dog barker. You're like, what? Yeah. So if you want to be impressed and thrilled and entertained for a few short minutes on the internet, that will work. You probably can't go this weekend. Bill Murray is doing the honors. His son is opening a restaurant in Chicago. And the reason you probably can't go is because it's invite only. But what he's doing is standing behind the bar and serving drinks. And it's called 21 Greenpoint. So if you want to go visit Bill Murray's son's bar. And according to his son, what my dad lacks in experience, he makes up for in tequila. Okay, my guest is coming up. The last line here, 27 photos of sleeping cats. You can check that out on the internet. Life After Death, Deborah Diamond. What happens when someone dies, you know, clinically, and then comes back with extraordinary abilities? How does that work? How does it change their life? Deborah's done the research, and she's also had her own life shift. And Deborah, thank you. I appreciate you getting up early to share these stories.
Oh, well, thank you. Good morning, Wendy.
I wanted to start with your background, because that's what's an amazing twist on this, too. Wall Street?
That's right. I am a former Wall Street money manager. I spent much of my professional career on Wall Street as a money manager, as a commentator on CNBC. And initially, in the investment business, I was a I was actually a healthcare research analyst, so I had a background in healthcare. That was for the first 10 years or so, and then after that, I was a money manager. But when I was when I was on Wall Street, I always knew things, and I didn't know how I knew things, but I, it was to the point where I would pick up an annual report or prospectus, and without even reading it, I would know about the management, and I would know about the industry, and I would know about the company. And I never really understood how I knew these things. And of course, on Wall Street, nobody talks about, you know, the word psychic never comes up. It's just not part of the vocabulary. So my boss used to say to me, you know, Deborah, you have good instincts. And I thought, yeah, I guess that's the answer. I guess I just have good instincts. So I didn't think too much about it. But in 2008, I decided to take an intuition development class in New York because I figured, you know, I had good intuition and it would be fun to take a class to learn some tools to tune it up. So that's what I did. I signed up for this class. I went up to New York. I live in Baltimore, but I went up to New York. It was a weekend class. And, you know, on Saturday morning, we did some exercises that were kind of basic and low-key, and I was getting everything in these exercises. And again, I didn't know how that was possible. We took a break, and when we came back from the break, the teacher said, now we're going to do a seance. And that was really nothing that I was interested in, and nor was it the reason why I went to that class. But I decided, well, I'll just go ahead and do this, and then we'll move on to the next exercise. You know, nothing's going to happen anyway. So the teacher told us she would put us in a meditative state and then take us out of the meditation. And if we saw anything or saw anyone, to let her know, and she would tell us what to do. And I thought, well, that's fine. That's not going to pertain to me. I'm not going to see anything. So, we meditated. She brought us out of the meditation, and she said, does anyone see anything? And I looked around the room, and everyone was looking at each other. And there were about 25 people in the room, none of whom I knew. And I raised my hand, and she said, yes, Deborah, what do you see? And I said, I see about 50 people. And what happened, Wendy, was I was seeing people who had passed over who were members of my family. I was seeing people who went with the people in the room. And then I was just seeing some random people as well.
See,
so that's what happened to me.
And that is absolutely mind-boggling because it's a complete paradigm shift.
Right. It was something that, you know, you can imagine I was totally unprepared for. This was not anything that I had any experience in, and, was totally overwhelmed. The teacher said, you know, if you see anyone, for instance, in the corner of the room, that means they probably go with someone sitting in that corner. And I said, well, I do see someone in the corner, and I described him. He was Hispanic. He had dark hair, handlebar mustache, big white teeth. And as I began to describe him, the woman sitting in that corner began to sob. And she said, I can understand who that is. That's my fiancé. He died 2 years ago. Mm. And so she said to me, the woman said to me, during the break, if I show you pictures on my cell phone, would you be able to identify him from these pictures? And I said, yes, because he was he was plain as day to me. So during the break, she flipped through pictures on her cell phone, and I said, there, that's him. And, you know, I could identify him. And she said, yes, that's my fiancé. And she was very grateful to me for making that connection for her. And she thanked me. And she gave me a big hug. And now you can imagine, I used to work on Wall Street. So there aren't a lot of thank yous on Wall Street, and there's no hugs either.
Yeah.
So I, you know, it wasn't lost on me that I had done something profound for somebody, that I had done something meaningful. I was still overwhelmed, and I didn't really know how, you know, what context to put any of this in. I spent the rest of the weekend in the class. And Sunday morning, Sunday night, I drove back to Baltimore. And on my way home, I called one of my sons. I have three sons, but this one scores high in logic tests. And I called him, and I explained to him what happened. And he didn't say a word, but when I was all done, he said, "Well, that makes sense. We're just energy, and the energy has to go somewhere." So that gave me a context, you know, sort of a pseudoscientific context to, you know, help me understand what happened. I mean, I still didn't talk about it. I didn't tell anybody what happened. I, you know, was still very shook up about it. But that gave me, a way of contextualizing it.
Yeah, with somebody close, with a relative, with somebody who, this person knows you better than anybody else, and say, "It's okay, Mom. I still love you."
Right. Well, there was that element, but I was also trying to understand what happened. You know, I didn't have a background in any of this. And I, you know, there's some people who, you know, are who've been taking classes for years and reading all the books and, you know, going to seances, and that wasn't me. So I didn't have any, you know, any basis for understanding any of this. Now, eventually, that summer, I went to Taos, New Mexico. I don't know if you've ever been to Taos,
Wendy. Oh, yeah.
So that summer, I decided to go out to Taos to paint. I'm also a painter. And I rented a place for 2 months, and I thought I would go out for 2 months to paint. And what happened was, a few years later, I was still there, and that's a very common theme for Taos, as you probably know. You know, when we talk to the locals and you say, "How long have you been here?" They say, "Oh, I came for a weekend 20 years ago." So, you know, people tend to stick out there, you know, certain types of people, artists, spiritualists, musicians, writers, this sort of thing. So that's what happened to me, and this is where I unpacked this gift that was given to me, this gift of energy, and learned to work with it. And I began to do readings and really became very comfortable with this. And this is where I became a practicing psychic and medium. Now, eventually, I came back to the East Coast because this is where my family is, and it was time to come back. And I thought, when I came back, I thought, well, that's the end of this. I mean, I'm coming back to Baltimore, and Baltimore's not like Taos. Nobody's really going to be interested in what I have to do. But that wasn't the case. Shortly after I came back, a woman approached me and asked if I would do a reading for her. And she was actually a near-death experiencer, someone, a young woman in her 30s who'd had a cardiac arrest at Hopkins Hospital. And she asked me to do a reading, and then she asked if I'd do a reading for one of her friends. And then the friend wanted a reading for her mother, and things just kind of mushroomed from there. And, you know, soon I was working as a, you know, practicing psychic and medium on the East Coast. Now, you probably wonder, how did I get to the near-death experiences? Well, I was asked to do a reading for a famous NDE, or near-death experiencer, in Washington, D.C. a number of years ago. And this man had some extraordinary gifts and abilities and that he returned with after his NDE. And, you know, I did this reading for him, and I was seeing some very unusual symbols. Psychics see things in symbols, and I was seeing unusual symbols with him. And that evening when I came back to Baltimore, I wondered about these gifts he was given. You know, what was he supposed to do with them? What about other NDEers? What do they get, if anything, and how do they get it?
That's where we're going to stop, because we're going to have to take a break. How do they get these gifts, and what happens? Because this is when we go into the really cool stuff. Extraordinary. information. Life After Death is the name of the book, Deborah Diamond, and it's DeborahDiamondPsychic.com. You can check her out. Just so much information there. We're not going to have time for this whole show to get into it, but this will get you interested in what happens when these people come back from the experiences that tell us there's a whole lot more going on here than we really have had time to investigate or to share. You're listening to Wendy's Coffee House.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Deborah Diamond is a psychic. And as you heard, that started 2008. The whole thing tripped the trigger, made a tremendous life shift. And just to illustrate that you don't have to have a near-death experience to experience an extraordinary shift. But that's part of this that I think is so fantastic. Deborah, you, from that point, you're probably curious about all sorts of stuff. And then you get into this where you're finding people who've had these near-death encounters coming back with extraordinary abilities. And you were talking about the gifts that we're going to get into that because that, you know, it makes, I think, everybody curious about how that can happen.
Right. Well, Wendy, what happened to me was a STE, a spiritually transformative experience, and NDEs, near-death experiences, are actually subsets of STEs. You don't have to die. You don't have to clinically die to have an NDE that most people think that you do because the media has promulgated that. You do have to have your consciousness needs to be flung out of your body, and that's why, in some cases, trauma, not only an automobile accident, a drowning, a heart attack, surgery, might accompany an NDE, but it's not always the case. But you know, we were talking about these extraordinary after effects, and yes, I had, read for a gentleman who had come back from a near-death experience with unusual abilities and gifts. And after I wondered about what happened to him, so I went online and I Googled near-death experience after effects. And what I found was there hadn't been any research done. So I decided, well, I guess I'll have to do the research. Now, it's not that far-fetched because, as I said earlier in the program, when I was on Wall Street, I actually spent a number of years as a healthcare research analyst. So I had a background in healthcare. And not only that, I worked with companies and industries that were so early stage, they weren't even cutting edge. So I was used to doing original research.
See, that is so incredibly convenient. You happen to be right place, right time, right personality, right aptitude. See, this stuff, there's more going on. Okay, now, yeah.
No, I definitely agree. Somebody wanted me to do this because mm-hmm. there aren't a lot of us around who are psychics who also happen to be former researchers in healthcare.
Yeah.
And also commentators, on television, and I had a radio program as well. So you know, I can go out and I can speak about these things.
Yeah. But,
you know, so, it, you know, so the stars definitely align. The sun, the moon, and the stars were all in alignment. So, you know, I found that the work hadn't been done, and I decided that I would go ahead and look at these near-death experience after effects. But I was interested in two types of after effects. One was cognitive and the other was physiologic. Now, why those two? Because many people return from near-death experiences and they have other after effects. They say, I'm more spiritual or I'm psychic. And I couldn't measure those. You know, I can't measure how spiritual you were before and how spiritual you are afterwards, or, you know, how psychic you are now. But if somebody comes back with a higher IQ or enhanced vision or enhanced hearing or newfound musical abilities, those are things that are irrefutable and they're demonstrable. And so those were the after effects that I was interested in researching. And that's, you know, and that's in fact what I did. Look, you know, I found people and people found me through word of mouth, through websites, you know, hearing about the research that I was doing. And they, you know, told me about their experiences. And these experiences don't discriminate. They're people who are young and old, men and women, people who live here, who live abroad, professionals, people who don't have jobs, who are retired. I mean, it's really across the spectrum. You know, near-death experiences affect everybody. In the U.S. alone, 15 million people have claimed to have a near-death experience, and I suspect that the number is even higher because many people don't know what a near-death experience is. You know, they have these things happen to them, and all they know is that something's changed, something's shifted, and most people don't talk about it because they don't want to be embarrassed. They don't want to be ridiculed. They don't, you know, they're afraid that their friends will laugh at them or their family will laugh. So they don't talk about it. But the experiences are actually fairly common. But the way we define near-death experiences is if you come back from your experience transformed, unable to go back to your former life. And that's really you know, the best way to look at it. Now, I know some of the researchers look at it through the lens of the elements, the light, the tunnel, the life review. And, of course, the media has seized on all of that because it's very dramatic, and it's especially visual. You know, so if you're filming a TV show or a movie, it's very there's a lot of visual impact with that. But the truth is that many people have NDEs and don't experience any of the elements. So, you know, the key is really if you're transformed, if you come back, you know, with the shift, as you mentioned earlier, can't go back to your former life.
I'll tell you what, I know from experience what that shift is like, and it changes everything. And I've also talked to some other people. Eben Alexander's one of the guys, and I'll talk with him again with a new book. I also talked to Tony Sicoria. And he's the one who was struck by lightning and came back with this incredible obsession with music, so much so that now he still is a doctor, but he came back to learn, and he's a master pianist. And so with that, that's a huge shift. And in your book, you start with a woman who has all these codes and this mathematical stuff that's just driving her bonkers.
Yeah, well, Tony Sicoria, you know, hears symphonies, and when he goes into the operating room, he hears symphonies. You know, and he plays the piano, and these were things that he, you know, didn't possess prior to his NDE. I think he was struck by lightning twice, actually,
yes.
Or had two NDEs anyway.
Yeah.
The woman in the book that I start the book with gets quantum physics downloads, and she has 32 bins of paper in her closet with these formulas, and she's a former hairdresser, so she doesn't really have, you know, she's not at all equipped to handle this.
That's not fair when they do that to you.
Well, you know, the thing is with these after effects is that they present as compulsions. So whether you're Tony Sicoria or you're one of the individuals in my book who comes back as an artist or a musician or gets quantum physics downloads, they don't stop. It's like your back door was blown open and you can't shut it. And so these downloads and this information you know, comes continuously. And, you know, for many people, the artists and the musicians, it comes in their sleep, or for the woman who gets the quantum physics, it comes in their sleep. And, you know, somebody, one of them said to me, you don't have any idea what this is like, you know, to have your sleep interrupted all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, many people say to me, gee, this sounds so great. How can I have one of these NDEs? And I think, well, maybe I didn't do a very good job of explaining this, because this is, like, tremendously disruptive. You know, this is not something that you want. But for a lot of people, when they hear about these abilities and gifts, they think, I'd like some of that. But it's not as wonderful as it sounds like it might be, because, again, you have one foot out in the universe now and one foot on Earth. You're not really in control of your life anymore. And it makes it very difficult to negotiate, life, and to, even do some simple tasks, or even relate to people, you know, in your family, or perhaps your friends. So it's very complex.
Well, all the stuff about goal setting, all the stuff about social standing, all the stuff that, you know, that you are programmed to do from the time you are a kid just goes off the chart. It's like there's no more value in that, speaking from my perspective. It changes.
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, people who have these spiritually transformative experiences and NDEs come back and they are only interested in authenticity. You know, there's a number of social and psychological shifts that they experience. One is that 65 to 75% of them get divorced. What happens is their spouse says to them, you know, honey, if you just stayed the way you were, we were fine.
Yeah.
But they can't. They're different. And so many things are different. I mean, they find that their jobs may not be interesting to them anymore. They want to do good. They want to do something to impact the world. Their tastes may change. Many of them become vegetarians. They find that they can't watch the news. They can't read the newspapers. They can't handle anything that's violent.
This, you know, interviewing these people and talking to them, you talk about how that changed you. You went from one perspective to another by the time you were finished.
Right, of course. When you're doing research, you always, you learn so much along the way, so many things that are unexpected. And, you know, one of the things that I found when I was doing this was I did readings on all the cases. And the reason I did that was because I did conventional research. I interviewed these people. I gave them questionnaires to fill out. And that's fine. But, you know, that only goes so far, because these people, when they had their experiences, they went someplace. There was, as you said, ephemeral. It's indefinable. And a questionnaire wasn't going to get at, what happened to them. And in many cases, they didn't know the answers to the questions. They didn't know, and I certainly didn't know. And I thought, well, you know, I'm a psychic and a medium, and perhaps if we do a reading, I'll be able to uncover something in that reading that helps to explain this experience. So they were all for that, you know, because, as I said, they had questions as well. So I said, well, you can... You know, I have questions I'm going to ask in the reading, but you all can ask questions too. And they said, sure. And they all had many questions, but they all had the same two questions. And those were, why me and what's my mission? They all used the word mission. They didn't say, should I go back to school or should I switch jobs? They all wanted to know what their mission was, because people who have these experiences come back and feel like they've got bigger work to do. They've got something that's driving them that they're supposed to accomplish here. And, you know, when we did the readings, we found that really what was behind this was these people are returning to Earth to act as pillars of light, to light the Earth. And it seems very much like it's directed by the universe. You know, by the way, an NDE is not something you can bring on yourself. You know, I've seen, since I've written this book, I've seen classes advertising, you know, how to have an NDE. You can't. This is very much directed by the universe. It seems as if the universe is always scanning for candidates, people who can be missionaries, people who can be candidates for the universe's purpose of spreading the light. And at an exquisite moment that's directed by the universe, they take these people, and they people have this experience, and then they return. And for the fortunate ones, they know what their mission is. If you have, if you're an artist, if you're a musician, if you're a healer, something where you're manipulating energy and being able to direct it towards, you know, large numbers of people, that's something that's applicable on Earth, and it's, you know, it's something that could be translated here on Earth. Unfortunately, the universe is not the same as Earth, and, you know, many of these people return, and they don't have a clear-cut mission, and they, many of them can wander from place to place looking for, you know, they think the mission is right around the corner if they just try it here or move over there. So for many of these people, they can spend their lives wandering and trying to resolve this issue. But for the fortunate ones, again, you know, they pursue this mission, and again, it's a compulsion. It's something that it just doesn't stop. Now, we also found in the research that there's a particular type of person who seems to be predisposed to having an NDE. I found that when I was reading for these folks, certain patterns started to come up, and one of them was that many of these people had traumatic childhoods, you know, had been abused as children or been in an abusive relationship. And, it seemed as if, when we went back and started talking to all the cases, this seems to be a pattern that's there. And it makes sense, you know, once you start thinking about it, it makes sense that they would be candidates, because for many of these people, their lives were referenced by darkness. And, at some point, as I said earlier, the universe steps in and plucks them out of that and exposes them to the light. And because of their backgrounds, they have empathy and they're ready for a different kind of experience. So it seems as if a certain type of person is ripe for this kind of experience. And so there does seem to be a predisposition. There's also some interesting other facets, including intent and manifestation. Some of these people outright asked for their NDE. Now, remember, you can't create an NDE, but a lot of them appeared to almost be in training, so that before the event, they had already gone down the road of, perhaps they changed their diet or they're practicing yoga or they're becoming more spiritual. So they seem to be almost in training for the event. There's lots of other questions, lots of things that we don't know about NDEs, a lot of work that still has to be done. But it's clear that this phenomenon goes beyond the elements, beyond the tunnel, beyond the light. I understand why scientists categorize it that way, because scientists are interested in statistics, but there's much more to an NDE than the light in the tunnel.
No, the frequency is another thing, too. Things change. You become aware of different energies and much more sensitive on many different levels with this experience.
We do know that, so we're talking here about people coming back from NDEs with extraordinary gifts and abilities. We do know that people come back from these NDEs with their energy altered. That seems to be related to these inexplicable gifts and abilities. You know, and if you look at some of those abilities, music, mathematics, enhanced vision or hearing, those are based on frequency, you know, and they're based on energy. So there's something about that heightened energy that they return with. We don't know what that energy is, but we do know that when they come back, that they interact with our electromagnetic field. And the energy that they're returning with, we don't have a name for it. You know, the scientists haven't figured out yet what that energy is, but they do come back, many come back electrically sensitive. You don't have to have an NDE to be electrically sensitive, but many of them come back that way.
Deborah,
yes.
We're going to have to stop there.
Okay.
It's time. Thank you. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much. And DeborahDiamondPsychic.com. The book, Life After Near Death. Extraordinary stories, extraordinary information. It's the next step beyond having this experience that really makes a huge impact. So if you got time, check the website. Definitely get the book. And then we'll tune in for more fantastic information to the universe. Set. Ready? Got it? Stay curious. Till next time, check the blog, wendyscoffeehouse.com. See you later. KCMO Talk Radio.